We were born to sob and to howl, to shudder and shriek, to jump up, crackle, scream our lungs out, and be left speechless. This is the good stuff in life, and the all-new Contour from Cox helps us get right to it. Just say what you want, and your TV finds it. Speak, find, feel, and get right to the good stuff. Available to residential customers in select Cox service areas. Advertised features available with Cox Contour 2 digital receiver. Professional installation required. Other conditions apply.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Student to Teacher Show, Dr. Danita Applewhite. And I'm just smiling this morning. I'm smiling because the show has not even started and the switchboard is lit. What is it? Is it the topic? Is it the factor that we are moving into circles now and introducing what we do at White Apple Institute? Oh, gosh. Thank you, God. Thank you for allowing us to do this work. Such a wonderful morning. I really appreciate you being here, all of you that are listening out there, all of the people that will be listening to the archive show. That would be great. I just wanted to share with you this morning that our topic is sponsored by White Apple Institute. The reason why we are focused on suicide and overcoming depression and suicide is because we're getting a lot of information in, a lot of questions in from students. We're seeing a very big increase in depression. And depression, as most of us know in the field of mental health and social work, psychology, we understand that depression definitely leads to suicide. I shouldn't say definitely leads to suicide. It definitely leads can lead to suicidal thoughts. Okay, that's what I meant to say. So we want to nip it in the bud, so to speak, when we see someone who is experiencing some of the symptoms of depression, and we'll get into that in just a moment. But I just want to thank, first off, that intro music from Nazim Rashid, the author of Reconnected, and he is a supporter of White Apple Institute. As a matter of fact, he's a board member and just plays a really mean horn. We thank him very much. His show follows the Student to Teacher show right after this, and it's called the Reconnected Show, Nazim Rashid. And so we want to also thank all of the staff, the volunteer staff at White Apple Institute, for all the fine work that they do to pull together all of the requests that come in from students and just helping to put this show together. Kudos out to our producer, Malvina Sullivan, and our executive producer, Kim Owens, for the fine work that they do to keep this show supported. And so many other people out there that I could go on and on that are doing, I don't care how little it is. I really appreciate it, and I know that the students and veterans that are served by White Apple Institute as they're trying to go to school and work, training programs are really happy about the support and the recognition that's coming through. Well, we have some special guests today that will be joining us, and I just can't wait to tell you about them. So stay tuned for the factor that we will be joined by Melinda Bale, an intuitive therapist, and we are also going to get a very special treat from someone who will be Steve Erie, who will be coming to us to talk about the Out of Darkness Walks. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce the episode information. One moment. When I talked for a moment, I had to take a deep breath because I had to focus on a student my first encounter with suicide. It was not very pleasant. And interestingly, I was talking to some of the students and staff at the White Apple Institute about whether or not there is anything, there's nothing that we can go back on in suicide and think about a happy moment. If you've lost someone because of suicide, it always leaves this question in your mind about what you could have done to help or whatever. Not that you necessarily, hopefully, will not take on the blame of what that person has done. But it's real important to understand what can lead to that and some of the ways that we can try our best to intervene to prevent someone from not only making an attempt, but of course completion of a suicide. You see, where our focus is at White Apple Institute is this, is that we want to help, our focus is on students and student veterans, adult learners, and the impact that they make, of course, on society and in their communities, and within many of them have children themselves, and so they become role models. And so to avoid a domino effect of depression and issues that relate to dropping out and tremendous stress, we like to say that at White Apple Institute we intervene by giving a lot of emotional support and also crisis stipends that will help them get over some of the financial and social problems that that people deal with when they're trying to succeed at school and the workforce. So that's our focus. And so we deal with what many people call the non-traditional students. Now, most non-traditional students, college students, make up about 70% of the student population. And so it's interesting that when we look at that number, that we're seeing that there's a lot of issues going on with non-traditional students that are not being addressed by the traditional suicide prevention programs that are on campuses. And one of the reasons why is because even though there's a high rate, believe it or not, and our guests will bring that to light in just a moment, there's a high rate of suicide among college students. And we're talking about 15 to 24-year-olds, but they have usually issues dealing with separation from home and adjusting to a new environment and lots of other things that maybe will be brought out as our guests speak this morning. However, with the non-traditional student, the students that we work with at White Apple Institute and other organizations, we have to deal with that adult learner on a different level, and especially if they're veterans trying to adjust back into civilian life, because they deal with that same adjustment to a new environment, and they also have to deal with the issues of being able to perform at a satisfactory academic level. Okay, and then to merge themselves into campus life. Most of the time, for me even, I find that most students are on most students are not able to go to, adult students are not able to go into the office and say, you know, I need some help on suicide prevention, because there's so many even cultural issues involved in that, shame, embarrassment. And so the information that they receive maybe in a pamphlet or on a poster in a wall may only introduce the concept that younger people are being helped by a certain agency. That non-traditional student that we work with, follow me here, that's about 40 years old, trying to return to school, has children at home, maybe a veteran, has many, many more issues to deal with that are not on those poster boards or in those brochures. So the question that has been coming across is, are suicide programs actually working? Okay, are they helping us? Are they getting out the right information? Okay, so that's one of the things that we want to talk about today. as we introduce some of our guests. Okay? All right. And I'm going to bring on Miss Melinda Vail. Melinda, are you there?
I am. Good morning, Dr. Applewhite. How are you this morning?
Doing so well. I for a moment, I know you had to hear that pause, and there was no way to stop it. Just in looking at the situation of what's going on with depression and suicide in today's world, I wanted to introduce you and have you. You've been on the show before, and I wanted to really compliment you on your dedication to help our adult learners out there and veterans to understand something about life, the quality of life. And now we're going to talk about depression and how it can lead to suicide and what you're doing in that arena. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I so appreciate that you have me on the show. You know, every 14 minutes or so, someone in the United States dies by suicide. This has become something that we really have to address as a disease rather than the way that we've addressed it in the past. Depression can be fatal, just like cancer can be fatal. Depression can be treated, just like cancer can be treated. We have to start bringing an awareness of depression and its issues in this country so that people can move out of those feelings of being embarrassed or ashamed by their depression and start reaching out and figuring out how to make movement with their depression and get themselves back on track. And we need shows like this. We need walks like Out of the Darkness, Community Walk, to start bringing an awareness to this issue. I worked with many, many families that have lost loved ones through depression and suicide, and the devastation that it leaves in its wake is without question the worst kind of way that one can lose a loved one.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, Melinda, I don't know how closely involved you are with this work. I don't know if you understand that what we're asking is that people focus on not only the act itself, okay, and the possibility that could happen, but on how we can intervene early enough to prevent things from going on as far as hopelessness and, you know, that sense of just giving up. You know, most mm-hmm. of the people we deal with as students, when they get ready to drop out of school, believe me,
mm-hmm.
it's a lot different, so much different than someone who is 19, 20 years old dropping out of
mm-hmm.
school.
Because mm-hmm. they absolutely.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes. And they have children that are looking at them, and they have to go home and say, yeah, I'm not taking that course anymore. Well, why, Dad? Why, Mom? Why aren't you going to school?
Mm-hmm.
You know? So it's a double whammy.
It is. I think we have to start, stop is the right word. Stop being afraid to discuss it when we see someone that is depressed and, you know, open the door to allowing them to talk and to start making movement and bringing it to light and talking with that person and knowing what the signs and signals are of depression, knowing when someone is depressed, if we see that listlessness, if we see that guilt, or if we see that hopeless or helpless feeling around them, that we bring it up, that we get them to engage, that we talk, that we encourage them to get help, that we don't just look the other way.
Melinda, your speech is great. Just move that microphone just a little bit away from you there, and so we can get, we want that clarity for you, especially you
mm-hmm.
have so many things to share with us. How did you get involved in looking at suicide prevention and intervention and your work with our special guest, Steve Shiro, who will be coming on in just a moment from the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, okay? Mm-hmm. So when we get him on in a moment, we'll be able to really expound on the Out of Darkness walks. But I'd like to know how you, as an intuitive therapist, and the great work that you're doing with people, and tell us a little bit about that, Melinda, please. Feel free to do that and give us your website. But how did you get involved with this suicide prevention stuff?
Well, I got involved with suicide prevention because I have so many families that come to me that have lost loved ones that way, and I counsel and help them connect to their loved ones on the other side and help them to make movement and understanding how to work through it in the best way that they can. And I also have a son who is 34 years old, and in his generation, it just seems like there are so many that are having that kind of depression, and so many of his friends have passed from suicide. He has at least five friends that have passed through suicide. And you know, my husband also is retired Army, and he has done some work around some of the veterans that are also dealing with this kind of issue and depression and post-trauma. And it's just such an important topic that there's no real awareness, no real understanding, no real connectiveness in the public. We don't talk about it. We don't have a recognition of what to do. I think everyone should have the National Suicide Prevention Hotline in their cell phone, for example, so that they can give it out if they need to, that kind of thing.
Very, very good idea. As a matter of fact, one of the things that I want to say before we start bringing on some of the people in our switchboard, and also we have some people on the chat line that are sending in questions, I wanted to just overview a little bit on some of the things that are really, really, I guess, you know, like I tell the students, bugging you. What is bugging you, okay? And one of the things that's bugging them is that they don't feel, again, that many of the much of the information that's out there is really related to them. Okay, I talk to so many young women and men, and I say that not necessarily in age, in chronological age, but in maturity, that they are really overwhelmed with trying to raise children, trying to balance out family life, deal with the emotional challenges, many of them dealing with disability issues, from fibromyalgia to bipolar disorders to PTSD. We just have a wide variety of students that are calling and saying, hey, this is really bugging me. You know, I'm feeling like I'm giving up here, okay? What is going on? Why can't I get the help that I need? So what we are trying to encourage people to do now is to recognize, just like you said a moment ago, recognize that when someone is having or in that pathway to having suicidal ideations or thoughts, any kind of ideas, how do you know that? Well, one of the ways we know it is we can see the depression. I mean, you can see that sometimes. Someone is very, very sad. And as I've said many, many times before, we have to look at the factor that we all get depressed. We all have mood swings. It doesn't mean that we all have a diagnosis of bipolar disorder, okay? So we have to be very careful of not only self-diagnosis, but diagnosing others. But some of the signs that we see with depression, when you really think it's serious, is when you can see someone doing it over and over and over again. They are just consistently depressed, days in, weeks in, months in even. Okay, and you're seeing some mood swings up and down. One day they're happy, one day they're very sad, and you just see this going in and out. Okay, and also I have noticed that when you look at a student that has their personal appearance has changed. You know, now I don't look too much at personal appearance, Melinda. I don't know about you. But I'm not into whether or not I can't probably remember if you dyed your hair or if you wore the same blouse last week. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yep, yep.
But sometimes that personal appearance can be, it changes from whatever a person looked like 3 weeks ago, and now for the last 3 weeks I'm seeing a lower standard of their personal appearance. And I'm seeing...
Or just body language. Body language, yeah. Too, you know.
Good point. Body language. Yeah. And you know, I don't know where this is coming from, but I'm just going to share it with you. You know how some students will come in and they just automatically know in their heart, they just know that they are bad, okay? Mm-hmm. And I'm always wondering about that. They, you know, whenever something happens in their life, they bring up this thing about, you know, well, I've been told I couldn't do it anyway, and I've been told that, you know, I couldn't achieve that, so that's why, you know, I'm not good in math and I can't go finish college. And mm-hmm. I always am able to trace it back, Melinda, to something maybe their parents have said,
right.
Okay? And I hear, and it has made my senses so acute now to hearing parents when they say, he is a bad boy,
mm-hmm.
okay? A bad boy. Over and over again, oh, that girl is so bad. She is so naughty, okay? So, you know, when you hear that, it's just, to me, it sets children up for feeling bad, that sense of low self-esteem. What else can I say?
Right. And it goes generational. There are generational patterns of that because we raise our kids the way that we've been raised. And the languages that we're taught create imprints in the subconscious mind. And then with that subconscious mind, we blink, breathe, our heart beats. We don't have an awareness that that's what's happening. But our subconscious mind is also what makes me feel, what makes us feel and think certain ways, too, from what our parents have done.
Yes.
So they're imprinting the subconscious mind.
I'm sorry, Melissa. I didn't mean to interrupt you there. I was going to say, it's almost like they live up to a label, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I see this, and I see this many times with the disabled label. You know, one of the things we say at White Apple Institute is our vision is to see people change the label of disabled to differently abled. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
mm-hmm.
well, another vision I'd like to see is to turn this I'm bad, this I can't make it, this feeling of a loss of self-worth. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to change mm-hmm. that and turn it around for myself and on a continuous basis.
Mm-hmm.
That's right, folks out there, listeners. I'm sure Melinda can attest to the fact that it is not a one-time thing that you all of a sudden become this great. Optimistic person that every day everything is up, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All of us have those ups and downs. But mm-hmm. but the bottom line is that we get these tools together that we can use. So what kind of tools can you share with us that would help us to stop not only the domino effect of labeling our children as bad that starts
mm-hmm.
this cycle of hopelessness, but also how we can help the adult learner in the present state, and especially
mm-hmm.
our veterans coming out. What ideas can you give us?
Well, before I give you a couple ideas, I also wanted to comment that it's not just from parents that people can start a belief system of not feeling good enough. You know, in today's world, there's all the bullying, the cyberbullying. Peers
mm-hmm.
can do it. There are other ways that we get into a belief system. It's not always just from parents that people get depressed. You know, one of the leading causes of suicide is a failed relationship. There are many other things that lead to depression and not just the way that parents raise us. But first and foremost, when you are feeling depressed to the level that you don't feel like you can get out of bed and you feel that hopelessness, that helplessness, your performance changes in school, you don't feel like even showering, you feel listless,
right.
You don't find any happiness, you've got to go to a mental health person to get
yes.
some help. You have to go to a counselor. You have to start talking it out. If you're suffering from post-trauma, you have to go to someone that specializes in post-trauma. That's first and foremost. One of the best ways to do some self-therapy is to journal and journal out negative thoughts and write some things down because we don't want to keep those things inside. There are groups that you can go to talk about depression and some of those feelings. Just talk to a friend, talk to a good parent, talk to a good teacher, talk to a good counselor. Begin to express yourself.
Yes, and even with the sense of embarrassment, okay? And I find this many times in the African-American community, along with Native Americans. There's a tremendous amount of embarrassment when even introducing the fact that there's a sense of hopelessness and that I'm feeling badly. And there's just not a lot of education that goes out in a lot of communities around the world, but especially I'm talking about the United States, that really talks about the chemical imbalances in the brain, and that it is there's nothing that's so different about depression, my friends. Clinical depression now. I'm not just talking about those up and down moments. Clinical depression is a chemical imbalance in your brain, okay? And it's nothing to be ashamed of. It's no different than breaking your leg. When you break your leg, you have to go and see a doctor. As Melinda is advising us right now, when you need help from a mental health perspective, call out, reach out to someone. And Melinda, don't you agree we have to evaluate who we're reaching out to? Because sometimes they can make the situation worse.
Well, absolutely. And in fact, Steve Shiro and I were just discussing that so many hospitals don't have beds, and that they send people who are that depressed and suicidal away, and we just don't have enough facilities, and we don't have enough awareness to start making sure that we can treat depression like an illness. And to the shame of it, I want to say that 4 times as many males die from suicide than females. And so a lot of times a man is less likely to reach out for help, to talk about it, to open up. And a man is more likely to feel like he has to take care of it by himself and to, you know, kind of stuff it down. And so that's part of the stigma with depression, is because when men are depressed, they feel like they shouldn't have to go somewhere and get the help that they need. And they have to have an awareness as well to open up to that.
Melinda, you are so right, and it definitely is a cross-cultural issue. It is not just among African-American males that have those issues. It's among white males, it's among Asian males. Men as a whole, because of the culture, the integration of the way that we have bred them, and even now today with our Iron Man and Superman figures, is that they are not supposed to be men, they're supposed to be men of steel. Okay, and what does that indicate? And so it's very, very difficult for men to reach out. And I find also, and maybe Steve Shiro, when he comes on, can share with us some of the disparity that goes on with the gender issues between female and male. One of the things that and you mentioned just a moment ago, Melinda, the factor of recently. Because it came up in my mind here, the Virginia senator, I don't remember his name, I believe he's from Virginia, his son stabbed him and then committed suicide. And I believe that the issues were that the father has seen, Senator Craybeads, that's his name, he had seen the symptoms, and what happened is they sent him back home from a mental health hospital because there were no beds available. So right into what you were just saying a moment ago, which thank you very much for bringing that out. So I guess we're going back to that original question again that the students were writing in. And this, you know how we do this, Melinda? Students write in different things, and we look for the theme in the different questions that they write in about, and that's how we actually develop the actual episode, okay? Mm-hmm. And so the theme question has been, are suicide prevention programs working, and why aren't they working for our particular population? Okay. One of the things I also wanted to bring out is, you know, I've been in this field for over 35 years and education and rehabilitation. And I'll tell you something, I have seen so many teachers that are unable to interact or even acknowledge the psychological, emotional, and social problems that go on with our students. And so there's a lack of awareness even in with our faculty about how to identify these things. And it's only when we get to the extreme that we start paying attention. Mm-hmm. But we need to start paying attention, don't you agree, a little earlier than that?
Absolutely, and we need to educate the educators about how to look for those signs and signals and those symptoms. The general public needs to understand what depression is and not make it like something that someone can snap themselves out of.
Mm-hmm.
It has to start being looked at like any other disease.
Just amazing. Mm-hmm. And our chat room, our producer, Melvina, is sitting over there telling me how many people are on that in that chat room right now. And we're going to start opening up to the people on the switchboard in just a moment. But I did want to say kudos to all of the staff again at White Apple Institute. I want to encourage those out there, those listeners out there. We are over 71,000 listeners, I believe it is now. And we need your help. We need your help to keep this show going. So go to whiteappleinstitute.org, hit that donate button, okay? And when you hit that donate button, you are going to be helping many adult learners and student veterans get the emotional support they need from qualified rehabilitation counselors and also stipends, crisis stipends, when they run into difficulties out there and in the real world, you know, from flat tires to child care issues. So please look at what we're doing at whiteappleinstitute.org and click that donate button to keep this show going and all the other work that we're doing out there in the community. We also want to acknowledge the fact that I believe Steve Shiro is ready to join us. We will be opening up some of the things on the some of the lines here. Do you think that's him there? Okay, that's okay.
I'm here.
Okay. Steve, oh, Steve, you're right there on the line there with Melinda. And
yes, I've been listening the whole time.
Okay. All right there. Okay, Steve, thank you so much for joining us. Steve Shiro is the is not only, God bless you, hon, not only the father of someone who unfortunately committed suicide, but he has taken that and moved it into a positive. And that's what we hope to do at the end of this show, Steve, is for people not just to leave. I can throw all kind of statistics at them, Steve, about what's going on, and you can too. But I'm hoping that people will leave this show today with a sense of, I know, number one, how to identify the symptoms, not only in myself but in other people. I also am going to feel a lot more comfortable about going and seeking help, okay? I'm not going to let my depression overcome me so badly that I start playing on those suicidal thoughts. I know how to start my own self-intervention. How about that? Can we move that? Yeah.
Well, thank you again for having me on. I think programs like this, as has already been said, is what helps to get that ball moving and to increase awareness, which is vital to this, to anything happening. I agree totally. I think we can throw statistics and numbers out all day long, and
sure.
And it's good to know that information, but it doesn't help the situation. And
no, and as a you as an educator, you've been in the business for how many years have you been? You just retired as an educator.
I just retired. I was teaching for 20 years. And mm-hmm. I just retired and been working not full-time but close to full-time with American Foundation for Suicide Prevention because
yes.
our goal is to increase awareness, to do research into this problem, to advocate for the mentally ill, and to educate. And one of the things that was brought up during the last half hour, which I think is vitally important, and I agree totally with. As an educator, I think one of the problems we have is that educators, through no fault of their own, but they just have not trained to see the signs of depression and suicide. And as was mentioned earlier, you know, we do a fairly good job of critical intervention. When someone is at a point of critical need, we do a fairly good job, although not a great job. But we're really, really, really dropping the ball on the preventative, which happens well before the crisis situation. You know, it would be this. It would be similar to a heart surgeon only treating heart patients once they had a heart attack. And not worrying about diet and other things that led to the heart attack. And so we need, one of the things that AFSP is doing, American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, is we're really advocating, and we'll be doing it again this January, we're really advocating by going down to the state legislature and talking to representatives and others about the need for teacher training in schools, K through 12, they understand that depression is something that can occur at a very early age, as sad as that is. You know, we have suicides. We have suicides as young as 10 years old in this country, and that's that's just a shame. That's just.
And I also hear that in the elderly population that there's a very high suicide rate. And you know, Steve, one of the things that concerns me a lot, and I don't know if you heard earlier, that many of the students that have been writing in about this particular subject have talked about the fact that when they go in to even seek information or even on the web, that there's nothing there that's actually saying that they're dealing with family issues or balancing work and school schedules. I mean, the posters, the information just doesn't really bring out the issues of the adult learner. And,
I'm sorry.
Go ahead. I just said there's concern for that. Please elaborate.
Well, I understand that, and you know, that's the the nature of colleges is that they're geared more toward the young learner. But I think if we look at all of those indicators that we're talking about, we can sort of put them into the category of stress factors, and there are different stress factors, obviously, for the older learner. But it's still a question of those factors increasing stress and doing well in school. That's sort of a common denominator, and balancing social life, family life, those other things.
And Steve, I know you. Go ahead.
I think that. There are a lot of good agencies out there, and I can give some of those if you'd like, some good agencies where students can turn to, especially veteran students. And I know that sometimes there is a hesitancy for veteran students to turn to the VA.
Oh, yes. We have some veterans online that will probably address that very issue that you just said just now. That will talk about the embarrassment of a veteran to admit. This is why we're having such a problem with PTSD right now, post-traumatic stress disorder, is because of the lack of awareness, of knowledge about it, and the willingness to go forward and say something. You know, so we appreciate that you're going to give us some information on that. I just want to acknowledge the fact that we keep this show going because WhiteAppleInstitute.org is sponsoring us. Please hit that donate button on the website as soon as you can, and also put your name into our subscribing to that newsletter. Okay? So back to you. Can you give us some ideas about some of the agencies that are out there, the major agencies? Real quickly, because we have about 21 minutes right now on the show, and I want to make sure we get some of these callers we can address that have some questions for you and Melinda Vail. Okay? So go ahead and shoot and get agencies.
I think that the, first of all, and I'm going to say, and I know most veterans are aware of this, but AFSP has worked really closely with the Veterans Crisis Line to help improve that. And the Veterans Crisis Line, even though there's a hesitancy sometimes to use that, I think is one of the best first steps because it allows for anonymous chat, it allows for anonymous text, it allows for anonymous phone conversation that might lead to finding those agencies that are needed. So there's no... There shouldn't be any fear of calling the Veterans Crisis Line and worrying about losing anonymity. And it's a good first step. And AFSP has worked really closely with the Veterans Administration in instituting what is called the Interactive Screening Program, which allows veterans to go on and do an interactive talk with a counselor where they can get immediate feedback. And this has been, almost a million vets have used this over the past few years.
Thank you. I didn't know that, Steve. Wow.
Yeah, and that number, if I can give it over the phone here, is 800-273-8255. And they press 1.
Very good.
And that's a good place to start. The other thing, and most veterans are maybe aware of it, I'm not sure, but if again, anonymity is something that they want to make sure that they can keep without their records going to the Veterans Administration, they can contact their local vet centers. And every city has a vet center. And there's vet centers across the nation, and I have the ones here in Arizona, and I realize we have an audience that goes beyond Arizona. But if they just contact the vet centers, and there are over 300 of those across the country.
Here's the problem. This is what the students are saying. They go online, they call the numbers, many of them can't get medication, they can't afford it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then, as we related just a moment ago, Melinda and I were talking about the senator's son who was turned away because of the lack of hospital beds. There's a shortage of resources in mental health. And then, on top of that, Steve, we have all these murder-suicide rates, okay, especially among students, okay? And it goes back very, very intensely to the factor that teachers, faculty, are not aware of the signs, because when I've just been doing my own research study. As a matter of fact, it was part of my doctoral dissertation. And as a veteran, I'm very, very concerned about this too. But looking back at all of the students, and especially any of the veterans, we can see that they have tried, the ones that have committed murder, suicide, they have tried to get help. And so what happens, the media has increased awareness of the factor that people who have mental health is correlated with violent acts, okay? And so that's one of the things that has increased the stigma and prevented people from wanting to come forward and say, hey, I've got a problem.
You bet.
How do we address that, Steve?
Well, we start with having conversations like we're having. You know, the reality is that the stigma of suicide goes back many, 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 many years, whether it's religious, whether it's cultural, societal, it goes back many years. And, you know, the image of the mentally ill as being dangerous to everybody, and the suicidal being dangerous to everybody, and the suicidal not being able to be depended on for anything, those types of stigmas run very deep. The way that we start to scratch that surface is through awareness and through conversations. Now, I know that that's not an immediate fix, but I don't think there is an immediate fix. What AFSP is... I'm sorry?
I have to agree with you. Yes.
What AFSP is trying to do, and what we do, I think, a pretty good job of across the country, is to continue advocacy. And in terms of veterans, AFSP has been very, very active in working closely with Washington in getting laws changed, laws such as the immediacy laws, which bring more funds into funding institutions that help deal with getting more beds in the community for those that need them, because that's critical. But above and beyond that, working closely, one of the things I think that we've been really helpful in is starting that conversation of getting the Veterans Administration to work more closely with local institutions, community-based institutions, so that the Veterans Administration isn't trying to handle the situation all on their own, that they're working closely with those organizations that are in the local community, because veterans are more likely to seek help from those community-based institutions than they are from the VA.
See,
we're really working closely with that.
I cannot thank you enough for the work you do. the work that American Suicide Prevention, American Foundation for Suicide Prevention does across the nation. It's just fantastic, phenomenal what your organization does. And I see that there are so many different chapters. You opened up the Arizona chapter, and
That's
we appreciate
correct.
That. But you just don't stay in Arizona. You're back and forth fighting for legislation. And one of the things that I appreciate about you, and we're going to bring on some of the guests there that have been on, that are on the switchboard, eager to discuss some things with you, is that I appreciate that you didn't turn off from the question that the students are asking. You're not avoiding the fact that there is a breakdown in the system, okay? And there are some issues. There's some issues with media and the way that media promotes an image of mental illness and the things that are going on. And I'm going to call you definitely our national spokesman, if you will, that you're going to help us bring more awareness to the adult learners and student veterans out there as they work on overcoming depression so that it cannot lead to suicide. Thank you so much for being on the show. Now, stay tuned now because we have some listeners on here that have been waiting for quite a while to come online, and we have a 238 number. A 238 number. Hello, good morning. This is Dr. Danita Applewhite. How are you? 238. As I move through your group.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Yes, hi.
Hi. Yeah, I went through depression myself when I was going through divorce and suddenly became a single mom in my 20s. I am now in my 60s, so obviously I survived. But the thing that was the hardest for me to do, I functioned, and I thought I was hiding the depression pretty well because I went to work every day and I did the things I had to do, including taking care of my children. In fact, because of having to take care of my children, that was the knot in my rope. That was what I hung on to, and that's what kept me from actually going through with the act. But when I look back on it, I'm going to sound a little harsh here for a minute, but I have to say that suicide is got to be one of the most selfish things that any of us could ever do. We are not thinking beyond ourselves at that moment. We are not thinking what our death, especially a suicide death, would do to the people who do care about us. And unless your best friend is a psychologist, you don't really have anybody to talk to who can help you work through it. I was fortunate enough to work for a college, and I had the benefit that I could go and talk to a counselor, and the counselor was very helpful. The medication they tried for me, they tried two different ones that did not work for me. However, through counseling and just putting myself in a more positive environment, I was able to work the issues. But that's not to say I don't still have issues. As I age, I'm dealing with physical problems.
Thank you so much for sharing it. And I don't know if you had anything special to say to Steve Shiro or Melinda Vale as they've been on the show here specifically. But we appreciate you sharing, ma'am, what you have. Is there anything, any question, anything that you wanted to say to Melinda Vale or Steve Shiro this morning?
Yeah, I think I'd like to ask if, when you're feeling this emptiness that makes you feel that you can't go on, can any of it be brought on with physical issues?
Yes. Actually, medical illness often brings on some of those feelings of depression, some of those feelings of helplessness. But if I might just address the idea of suicide being selfish for just a moment, because I don't want to discount what you're saying, but I do want to say to you that when someone is in the throes of that level of depression, what they actually are feeling is that their passing would give relief to some of those around them because they've been a burden to them and the depression has been a family issue. And so the person who is feeling like they want relief by ending their life also feels like there will be relief for the family members and loved ones. So that's the thought process. It's not exactly a selfish thought process.
Well, and I want to just jump in on that also, because I think it's important, because your viewers' view is shared by many people. And, you know, I would just say that, and I think Melinda would agree, that no one wants to die by suicide, but the darkness and the emptiness and the pain that they're feeling at the time, death is preferable than to go on living. And so I don't view it as a selfish act. I view it, as Melinda said, as an act where they're feeling it would be a benefit to themselves and others. And we have to understand that a person who does this is not in a rational state of mind.
Yes.
So for them, to present it in a way that we would view it, I think, is not totally fair to the person who is in the throes of depression.
Point well taken. Thank you very much, Steve, for that. And yes, caller.
After getting through the depression.
Pardon me?
I said I came to that conclusion after I was past the crisis.
Yes, yes.
That I
and,
was,
and
in fact, being very selfish.
We appreciate you bringing that to the point to the forefront here, because that is, as Steve says, many people do feel that way, and so we appreciate you bringing that forward for us, so that we could address that, and that there's some empathy that can be given to those who are dealing with depression and how to overcome that. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Again, Steve, we have approximately 8 minutes left on the show here, and I just want to make sure we get everybody in. Caller, stay tuned, because I'm so glad that you showed the movement. That's what Student to Teacher Show is all about, is the movement from being the student, the one who is learning, to being the teacher who is willing to share what they've learned. Okay? So this is not just about academic students. This is about students of life, okay? So thank you so much for showing us that evolution of thought that you've come from not seeing it as a selfish act, to the compassion and the empathy that Steve and Melinda are yielding to that. We have another caller coming in. I think this is from, looks like a San Francisco number, 216. Good morning. Okay, one moment. Let's see. Okay, here's a number here, a 688 number. Good morning. This is Dr. Applewhite. Good morning. This is Dr. Applewhite. 688. Okay. All right. We'll keep on moving along here. We want to make sure we get everybody. And sometimes I know people go away from the phone, or they have it on mute, and it's hard to get right back to us. We have a 209.
Good morning, Dr. Applewhite.
Good morning. Good morning. Please share your thoughts this morning. We're on kind of a short deadline. We're going to do this show, another part of this show in the future. But do you have any comments for Melinda and Steve?
Hi, this is Kim calling from San Francisco, one of the board members.
Oh,
and
thanks.
I was just calling on to say hello. I appreciate both of you being on the show and sharing information. I would like to know from Melinda, do you guys have an organization where you're working with athletes? Melinda and I believe it's Steve?
Yes.
Yes.
Well, I'm going
yes.
to have Steve answer that, because he actually is a part of the Out of Darkness walk, and he may have some athletes coming. I don't know. Steve?
Well, if the question is, do we have something specifically from AFSP dealing with athletes? Yes, we're working, and I don't know which athletes you're speaking of, but we are working closely with the National Football League. American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, again, is working closely with their call-in line, just as with the mm-hmm. veterans, so that they do have that interactive call-in line, because suicides among ex-NFL players has really skyrocketed over the past few years, along with mental illness, along with dementia, those types of things. And so they now have a very active call-in line, much like the VA call-in line, and AFSP was instrumental in helping to get that going.
Thank you very much. Awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you for bringing that.
Yeah, and as far as any other specific things to athletes, as you know, AFSP reacts to a lot to the needs, specific needs, but also general needs. And so we as an organization are definitely in tune with things that are going on. But when a need arises, such as with the NFL, such as with the veterans, where it's a critical need, we do try to jump in and have special programs that are implemented for that.
Thank you. And on that note, we don't want to forget that we always, in our close of our show, we have a vet-to-vet update. And we have Mitch online, who probably, Mitch Cavanis, leads our vet-to-vet movement. And he is online with some thoughts. And Mitch, very quickly, can you share with us? I know this show has just been just phenomenal. But you have a few moments here that you can share with us any updates or any comments you have. Good morning, Mitch.
Well, I'd just like to say thank you for Melinda and Steve because they have given a lot of light to some issues that has been very kept in the dark. And I'd just like to say there was a situation even in my life where I was in so much pain I wanted to come home and shoot my foot off because I felt like the VA was not taking care of my problem. Mm. I did not consider it to be an act of depression, but now I can see that it was. And I'm just happy that I had family support and the support of my medical staff that encouraged me that I have to go through the process. And a lot of times the process seems to take too long. And
yes.
I have had a friend that I called, and he was getting ready to take his life. And I'm just going to tell you, sometimes just a phone call to people, whether it's the suicide hotline, these things really help bring people back to reality. Because my friend was getting ready to do it, and I didn't know. I didn't even know what the signs were. He didn't display any particular signs for me, but me talking to him brought him back to the state where he felt like he had something to live for. I didn't even realize I did it until the next day he called me and just told me I was getting ready to take my life. I had the gun in my mouth. So anything that you and Steve and all the organizations that's doing for suicide prevention, I consider it a feather in the hat of you guys because it is a tough rock to crack because a lot of vets don't want to reveal that side of them, you know. And
yeah.
I just can say I'm sorry for your loss, Steve, but I'm glad that you've turned your loss into a campaign to help those who have mental issues. And I can only applaud you, Melinda, because you are talking about how teachers should be more aware. And I think that that is one thing that they drop the ball on. They consider like...
Mitch, we've got to wrap this up here. Thank you so much, Mitch, for your comments.
Thank you, Mitch.
Mitch, I want... Yeah.
Go ahead, Steve. As we begin, we have to start closing up now. I just want to make sure that we get some last comments in from Steve and Melinda, especially inspirational, I mean, any kind of inspirational message you can give us in this last minute that we have left on the show. And
I just wanted to say that, you know, we mentioned earlier about the Out of the Darkness walk, and, you know, one of the things that American Foundation for Suicide Prevention does here in Arizona, we are having an Out of the Darkness walk next Saturday, and that is a critical, and they're across the country, so wherever your listeners are listening, you know, we have Out of the Darkness walks occurring throughout the year, and that's a time when folks can come together, whether you are a survivor of suicide, whether you are someone who's contemplating suicide, whether you're suffering from depression. It's a time to come together and be with others who understand. And it's also a time for raising awareness, because I'll say, as we've said throughout this hour, that by raising awareness, that's how we begin to change the problem. So it's really important. It's really important. And in Arizona, it's this Saturday, December 7th, at Kiwanis Park in Tempe. I also just want really quick, because I think this is important. When we're talking about suicide, and I always try to get this out to everybody, I always suggest that we try not to use the word committed. Committed has a very negative connotation. People commit murders and they commit crimes. I like to suggest to people to say died by suicide. Because I think my son died by suicide. He didn't commit anything. And I think just those little things will help to change the conversation, and in doing so, reduce that stigma that we've talked about during this hour.
Steve, just promise that you will come back. We are going to do another show. What I'd like you to do is to come back after the Out of Darkness walk, okay, and let us know how that went, okay?
I would love to. Just invite me any time.
And thank you, Dr. Applewhite, for having me on today as well.
Melinda Vail, thank you so much. And to get in contact with any of our guests, any of our speakers, please make sure you contact us at whiteappleinstitute.org, okay? And I will make sure that we get that information to you about the Out of Darkness walk, or how to contact Steve or Melinda Vail. We close our show this morning thanking God, our Creator, our higher power, for the student-to-teacher show. This is Dr. Denny Applewhite signing off with you. Wes Ricks closing us with Two Worlds.
We were born to sob and to howl, to shudder and shriek, to jump up, crack up, scream our lungs out, and be left speechless. This is the good stuff in life, and the all-new Contour from Cox helps us get right to it. Just say what you want, and your TV finds it. Speak, find, feel, and get right to the good stuff. Available to residential customers in select Cox service areas. Advertised features available with Cox Contour 2 digital receiver. Professional installation required. Other conditions apply.
That isn't just the sound of the all-new 2016 Mercedes-Benz GLC being put through its paces. It's the sound of innovation. The innovation behind one of the most advanced SUVs on the road today. With multiple driving modes, a suite of intelligent drive systems, and a technology-filled cabin that sets new standards in modern luxury. This is what innovation sounds like. Now, discover what it feels like in a 2016 Mercedes-Benz GLC.
Some equipment described is optional.